Good morning. As those of you who are observing your second general order might have realized that someone turned the lights on, it turns out there are lights in the courtroom. And thanks to Joe Lusk and his team, they've spent a lot of time fixing them. We may play around with them, not in the middle of oral argument, but in the course of the next couple weeks to get the right lighting, the mood lighting correct in here. But anyway, that's what's going on there. The court now will call United States v. Norman. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Jenny Myers, and I represent the appellant, Troy Norman, in this case. Chief Judge Baker, with your permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sergeant Norman will live with the guilt that he feels for his role in TPN's injuries for the rest of his life.
Can you hear in the back, please? Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thanks.
Sergeant Norman will live with the guilt that he feels for his role in TPN's injuries for the rest of his life. But the tragic outcome does not establish that his behavior in this case was service discredited. Clause 2 of Article 134 cannot be a catch-all. The term service discrediting has to have meaning. The current form of service discrediting and how to analyze it is difficult to apply because it's a vague and amorphous standard for members. This court should establish a framework under which it can establish, other fact finders can establish whether or not this behavior serves discredit. I have identified 8 factors that this court has applied in the past, and those factors create this useful framework. The factors are the time, place, and purpose of the behavior, whether the behavior was morally depraved, the knowledge and intent of the individual, the actual public opinions about the behavior, and whether there is any kind of service connection to the behavior. The amount and type of evidence will vary depending on the action alleged in the case.
Do you agree with the, the law in Phillips is that the proof of the conduct itself may be sufficient for a rational trier of fact to conclude beyond reasonable doubt that under all the circumstances it was of a nature to bring discredit upon the armed forces. So do you agree with the general proposition that the conduct itself can satisfy the element?
Your Honor, the conduct itself and the circumstances surrounding it are the things at issue and things that should be analyzed with these factors. So the circumstances, I believe, are described by these factors.
Would you do 3 and 5 again? I was writing very fast.
Yes, Your Honor. The third one is the purpose for
purpose.
The behavior.
Okay.
And 5 was knowledge, but 6 is intent. So knowledge and intent are very similar.
Not subjective knowledge and intent on the part of the appellant?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Now, there are various and sundry crimes that...
Now, you said actual public opinion.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think you recognize in your brief that the element itself is of a nature to do so.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're converting it into that, into an actual have done so.
No, Your Honor. It's simply a factor to consider. So if there is actual evidence that a member of the public has diminished their opinion...
Oh, so then it certainly would be of a nature.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's one of the factors to consider.
These are factors, not dispositive factors.
Correct, Your Honor.
So is that how you're squaring your position with Phillips? Phillips saying that there's no requirement for the government to show that, but you're saying that that is something that this court and the other court should consider?
Yes, Your Honor. The various crimes that can be charged under an Article 134 allegation are very broad. So the amount and type of evidence will vary depending on the specific allegation in the case. You have a very wide range of issues. You have the famous case like United States v. Jordan, where leaning on a sailboat was charged as service discrediting conduct. And then you also have something like child pornography in Phillips. Something like child pornography, where it's a morally depraved issue, will require far less evidence to prove that it's service discrediting. But something like leaning on a sailboat, it may be service discrediting, but it's going to require quite a bit more evidence than something like child pornography. In this case, a lot more evidence is required because the scienter element is so very low. You have an inexperienced father who had only given his son a bath once before. He had never used that bathroom, and he'd only lived in that house for about 30 days. The government called a civilian doctor, Dr. Peck, who actually treated TBN. He had to educate the members that baby's skin is thinner, that they are at risk for burning twice as fast and in different circumstances.
Can we move beyond the facts a little bit? So what exactly would you require of the government to show in this particular case?
In this case, Your Honor, knowledge, or that he should have known of the risk of a burn in the bath. Again, you have an inexperienced father who...
So that, in your mind, the knowledge or the risk would be determinative of whether the element was met?
It could be, Your Honor. It depends on what the evidence is. You know, if he had attended some kind of class that said, you know, this is a real risk, or if he obtained information before he left the hospital when the child was born that this could be a risk, or if he'd used the bathtub before and had actually seen this be an issue.
So what about 10 seconds into the 45 seconds by his own admission that he left the baby in there? Don't you think, you're saying he had no notice, but what about after he stuck the baby in there? Do you think the baby was silent for 45 seconds while he was in there cooking?
But, Your Honor, the government's expert, Dr. Peck, said that burns could have happened as little as 2 to 5 seconds. Now, he was in the tub for longer than that, but it doesn't mean that the water was that hot that long. So 2 to 5 seconds is all it took for this case. So he didn't have the opportunity to know at the time that the water was too hot. And it's common knowledge that, you know, water out of the tap gets hot, but it's not common knowledge that it can cause damage. It might be discomfort, but it's not... It's
not common knowledge that hot water can cause burning?
Out of a tap? No, Your Honor. This is something that is... It's beyond... It might be within the realm of knowledge for a very experienced parent. But someone who doesn't have kids has never really dealt with this before. It's not something...
What about someone who's ever turned on a faucet and stuck their hand under it?
Your Honor, I believe it is not within common knowledge that that could cause burns. Again, it could cause discomfort, but not burns, not damage. And again, baby skin is very different. It burns much faster than adult.
It was the appellant's statement that it was 45 seconds, correct? That comes from the appellant?
Appellant said that he left the tub for 45 seconds, but the doctor testified that the burns could have happened within 2 to 5 seconds.
I understand. I think I cut you off.
No, that's fine.
Counsel, I want to move off the facts.
But he did.
No, please.
Move off the facts for a minute. I think from Phillips, it's pretty clear that proof of the underlying act itself can be sufficient proof of service discrediting conduct in certain cases. My question to you is, in those cases where the government doesn't bring in additional evidence, what is the government required to do? Anything? Is there anything that they need to do to make that connection? Do they need to argue it in their opening statement, in their closing statement? Or do they just have to produce the evidence of the underlying conduct and that's it?
Your Honor, in Phillips, this court found that the government was not required to actually argue the charge. I would encourage this court to require military judges to give this framework to the members. And if it's inclined, it would be best to give them the factors in the record that they could potentially consider. It would make the record very clear, and it would also prevent conclusive presumptions. Here, Staff Sergeant Moody actually gave an opinion. I'm sorry, the trial counsel requested that Staff Sergeant Moody give the members a conclusive presumption as evidence. He didn't give any facts to Staff Sergeant Moody. He said, in your opinion, is endangering a child service discrediting? No facts from this case, not applying it at all. That's a conclusive presumption. And that's the only thing that they had to go on in this case. Now, the CCA made this error in Phillips where they drew this conclusive presumption, or what it looked like a conclusive presumption. If it's easy for a CCA to do, it is so much more easy for members to do, and that should be prevented. And that can be prevented with extra instruction.
What is the case law basis for your, you know, 14 points?
The 8 points, Your Honor.
8 points.
They come from different cases that this court has decided. Guerrero and Vaughn discussed the time, place, and purpose.
Okay.
And then Guerrero and Caldwell hinted at this idea of knowledge and intent and what was required there. And then morally depraved came from Phillips. It was, you know, child pornography. Everybody knows that that is something that is not okay. Moral or knowledge and intent were already established, but moral depravity seems to be important in previous opinions. Public opinions, again, in Phillips, and then whether there is actually a service connection comes from the plain language of the statute. Is it service discrediting? And it can't be service discrediting if there's no kind of connection, in most cases.
To the service?
Correct, John.
Is there a different...
Go ahead.
Is there a difference between prong one and prong two? I know this is a prong two case.
Oh, of course.
G-O-N-D and S-D. Is there a difference between them?
Yes, Your Honor. And this framework is for service discrediting.
Right.
Yes,
okay.
Now, the public is simply not going to lower its opinion of the armed forces in this case where the scienter is so very low. The actions were not morally depraved. It happened in a private residence on base. It's only known to civilian members of the medical public, and Dr. Peck got on the stand. The government had the opportunity to ask his opinion whether or not his opinion was lowered of the armed forces. They didn't ask the question.
Well, you're talking about where the scienter is so low, but in terms of looking at this in terms of service discrediting conduct, is there, in your view, an objective standard in terms of you're dealing with an NCO rather than some 19-year-old PFC, and kind of a common sense approach of how a parent would deal with a child in a bathtub with hot water?
So those things can certainly be considered, but what should also be considered is his level of experience as a parent.
So you keep on going back. It's your position then that although it seems to be an objective standard about tends to discredit the service, that it's really a subjective question of what was going on in the mind of the individual accused.
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe the subjective is much more informative, and this question of service discredit has to presume a knowledgeable member of the public who is looking at this case. Knowing the evidence that was in front of the members, and the evidence in front of the members is going to be what the person actually knew or intended to do.
Should we draw any conclusions from the fact that the panel imposed a relatively light amount of period confinement, but did not impose a BCD, instead imposed a dishonorable discharge? Does that go to the point of the fact that the panel felt that this went to the issue of service discrediting conduct?
Your Honor, trying to untangle the web that we get out of members is a treacherous ground. It's not something that I would encourage. It's hard to know what was going through their minds and what facts were lingering. And again, if this court can require more instruction to the members and give them a better framework to work with, it would be more clear what they relied on and what sticking points they may have had.
If we were to not adopt your 8-point plan, but instead were to stick more closely with this court's majority opinion in Phillips, would there be sufficient evidence, in your view, for service discrediting conduct when the government went beyond simply proving the injuries, but also brought into the court before the panel members the amount of different procedures that had to occur, the fact that civilian doctors were involved, that there initially was concern about whether this was child abuse and so forth. Under the Phillips approach, would that, in your view, be sufficient to show additional evidence beyond merely proving the offense to show that this was service discrediting?
No, Your Honor. Anything that happens after the offense itself does not change the nature of the previous action.
So you would cut it off with what is the nature of the offense itself?
Yes, Your Honor. And further, it can't be outcome determinative. This exact same behavior could be charged where there is no injury. And the question remains, was his behavior any different? You know, the risks were the same. His behavior was the same. But the outcome was different because the faucet was different or any other factor was missing other than his own behavior. It can't be outcome determinative, and that's the trap that the CCA fell into.
Now, when you say outcome determinative, what are you trying to articulate there?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
What are you trying to articulate? What precisely did you view as outcome determinative? In
the extent of the injuries, the pain and suffering, and the hospitalizations that the CCA relied upon. Now, the extent of the injuries is also required for grievous bodily harm. And relying strictly on that that part is another problem. It's another conclusive presumption saying, if in any case where there's child endangerment with grievous bodily injury, we have service discrediting. And that's not how this works. That's a constitutional issue.
Applying the Jackson standard, we're under the Jackson standard, correct?
Yes, sir.
What is the hardest or most difficult fact or circumstance for you to address under the Jackson standard, and what is your response?
Your Honor, it's the question that I just got from Judge Olson. Is can you look at the injuries, the extent of harm after the fact? And again, it can't be outcome determinative. It has to be something that's...
What about the length of time that the child was left in the bathtub?
Absolutely.
How do you address that if a member is sitting there saying, well, I understand leaving a child in a bathtub for 5 seconds while you grab the towel or look for a bar of soap or something, but 45 seconds is a pretty long time.
Yes, sir, but he never left the room. 45 seconds in the bathtub when the father is just across the room is not that long, especially at 10 months old. If it was a significantly smaller child, that may have been a bigger issue, but 45
seconds. So it appears that you're arguing, if I understand your statement earlier, that the water did not become hot till the final 2 or 3 seconds?
That's what the government expert testified, that these burns could have happened within 2 to 5 seconds.
No, right, no, that's different. They could have happened within 2 or 5 seconds, but did they happen at the 45-second mark or did they happen at the 1-second mark? Is there any evidence in the record as to when in the course of the 45 seconds they occurred?
Yes, Your Honor. Sergeant Norman's statements said that he was searching for the soap, and as soon as he heard the scream, he went to the child. So it happened at the end of the 45 seconds while he was sitting in the tub.
That's your inference from his statement. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, in this case and in other cases, I think reasonable people can always differ as to whether particular conduct was service discrediting. And, I mean, that's what they're there for. That's their job. Isn't the more important thing for us to look at is how it was presented to the members and under what constraints or directions that they handled it? And if that's the case, what did the military judge do wrong here and what should he have done, if anything, differently?
Under the law as it stands, the military judge gave the instructions that he was required to give. But the best course would be for the government to argue the theories that the members can actually rely on, or for the military judge to offer a framework in addition to listing out the pieces of evidence on which they're allowed to rely. That way you would avoid something like a conclusive presumption, where you can see something like that in a written opinion. It's impossible to know what kinds of conclusions members are impermissibly drawing if they're not given the right instructions.
Okay, you say that that's the best course, but at the time this court-martial occurred, was that required?
No, Your Honor.
So what the military judge did in terms of the instruction was correct and consistent with case law at that time?
It's not error, Your Honor, but it creates issues for this court to consider.
Thank you.
Okay, so what you're saying basically is the outcome of this, however nasty for the child, is simply not the kind of thing that would, if known, produce a lower opinion of the service, because what you have is not intentional misconduct, but a bumbling father.
Correct, Your Honor. This is something that it's a slip and it could happen to just about anybody. Would we like to say that no parent will ever let this happen to their child? Sure, but
would you like to say that no babies ever get left in hot cars during the summer, and it happens every summer?
Yes, Your Honor. And the government's expert said these kinds of burns happen as an accident all the time. As I stated, this court should articulate a framework to help members and to help military judges apply the service discrediting standard. Governor, I see my time has expired. May I briefly conclude? Thank you. Here, the members didn't have that kind of guidance. They were struggling with this vague and amorphous standard, and the only example that they have was Staff Sergeant Moody's question from the trial counsel that asked him to draw a conclusive presumption, something that's not permitted. The government simply did not offer legally sufficient evidence of the terminal element. This court should reverse the opinion of the lower court.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government, please.
Morning, Chief Judge Baker, Your Honors, may it please the Court. I'm Captain Matt Harris, along with Mr. Brian Keller, I represent the United States. This Court should affirm the lower court for two reasons. First, the evidence of the appellant's conduct itself was sufficient to establish that that conduct was of a nature to be service discredited. And second, though conduct need not be known to the public to be service discredited, appellant's conduct and its shocking results were known to civilian medical personnel. Now, the appellant wants you to create a new framework, but there is an existing framework that is entirely workable in these cases, and that is the totality of the circumstances. That's what the members were instructed to use to determine whether or not the appellant's conduct was service discredited.
Well, now, let's look at that. In Phillips, we said that the military judge must instruct the members how to evaluate the evidence.
Yes, sir.
And where did they do that here?
This is on page 253 in the Joint Appendix, Your Honor. He informs them that under the circumstances, the conduct must be of a nature to discredit the service. So the members understood then that they had to look at the circumstances surrounding that conduct to determine whether or not it was, in fact, of a nature.
So that is sufficient to meet the criteria here of Phillips in that regard?
Yes, sir. Now, this Court should follow its opinion in Phillips. That this Court held that even conduct unknown to the public may be of a nature to discredit the service.
When you talk about conduct, what exactly are you referring to? Are you referring to the conduct of placing the child in the bathtub? Are you talking about placing the child in the bathtub and leaving? Are you talking about the results from that conduct? What is it you mean when you say conduct?
The conduct here, ma'am, was endangering the child through culpable negligence. And the circumstances surrounding that conduct include the catastrophic results for the child, the significant burns he received.
Is this Phillips or is this something else?
Phillips should govern the way that this court...
That's not what I asked you. I said, is this Phillips? Phillips, you got kiddie porn hanging out there. You have moral depravity in the words of point three or whichever one it was. Here you got a hurt kid. And you've got basically nothing convicted of but bumbling. We have the bumbling dad. So where's service discrediting conduct?
Your Honor, the bumbling...
Because the kid was badly hurt? Is that what determines it? Or because civilian physicians saw that the kid was badly hurt and treated him? I mean, we said in Phillips that's not necessary. So where are we?
Your Honor, you're correct. It is not necessary, but this court did indicate that is one factor that the members could consider in determining service discredit. This is conduct that is somewhat different from Phillips. However, the bumbling father defense was an excellent defense that the appellant could have offered at trial.
Sounds like the appellant did offer it at trial, and the members bought it.
Well, to the extent that they believed he did not act by design.
But that's still, right.
But they still found that he... engaged in culpable
negligence. And he was culpably negligent.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, it sounds like bumbling to me.
Your Honor, it requires that the appellants disregard the consequences of his actions. So that there's an objective standard here, and they had to determine that there were foreseeable consequences that this conduct would create a danger for the child in order to find him culpable negligent. So the members made that determination that this was something more than simple accidents or inadvertence.
Okay. Well, so... Now back to the beginning, where's the service discrediting in that?
Your Honor, where you've got a Marine NCO who cannot even bathe his own child without catastrophic results.
Well, maybe they shouldn't have enlisted him because he was really dumb, but that doesn't go to this. Where's the service discrediting?
Your Honor, the public, if they became aware that... He had left the child in the bathtub for a significant period of time.
Now, he said 45 seconds.
Yes, sir.
What does the record reflect as to, was that 45 seconds while he was in the same room? What are the facts that you're relying on to demonstrate discredit here other than the fact of the injuries?
So, Your Honor, there's a vanity section of the bathroom. He turns his attention away from the child for at least 45 seconds, which was long enough in this case for him to sustain these very significant burns. So the facts that the members could have and likely did rely on in coming to this conclusion were the fact that he was an NCO, that there were catastrophic injuries, that these injuries...
Just to stop, though, if we stipulated that it was a pure accident, the mere fact that he was an NCO and there were injuries doesn't make it discrediting, correct? If a child falls off a jungle gym and there are injuries and the child is the child of an NCO, that doesn't make it service discrediting. That makes it too bad he fell off the jungle gym, right?
Your Honor, if this is Your Honor, if this is pure accident, then you don't even establish the first element of the offense, and there's no question about the second element.
The discredit comes from the culpable negligence? Is that your argument?
That is one factor, yes, Your Honor.
So the one element proves the other element?
Your Honor, the elements of the facts that establish the elements, or the first element, can certainly be considered by the members in determining whether or not, under the circumstances, that conduct was of a nature to discredit the armed forces.
Are you done with that answer?
Yes.
What does the record reflect, if at all, with respect to when the burns occurred? If the record indicates that the child was in the bathtub for 45 seconds, is there anything in the record that indicates the child was wailing for 45 seconds, or the water did not rise to a hot temperature until the end, and then the baby cried? Or what? Do we know anything about the 45 seconds?
So, Your Honor, there are a few different facts that come out of the record. The appellant does testify that at some point he heard TB and whimper, and that's me. But that would indicate that it was later in the timeline. The special agent who tested the water indicated that it did become hot fairly quickly. So there's not anything in the record indicating exactly at what moment the water reached the temperature at which it could burn the child, or if it was already hot, whether or not the child.
Is there anything in the record from which one can or cannot infer that the child was left in the tub while it was hot?
Certainly.
Meaning that it occurred somewhere before the last few seconds?
Yes, Your Honor. If the members relied on the testimony of the special agent indicating that the water became hot fairly quickly, as long as it was turned to the hottest position, they could certainly infer or determine that that's what occurred.
When you say the hottest position, which position are you talking about?
12 o'clock, Your
Honor. And what position did the appellant say that he had left the faucet at?
He testified that he had left it at 9 o'clock.
So not 12 o'clock.
Correct, Your Honor. However...
And was there any evidence in the record that he had, in fact, left it anywhere other than 9 o'clock? Did the government present any evidence on that fact?
No, Your Honor, other than the temperature of the water that would likely have been required to cause these burns, as testified to by Dr. Cook. So at the 9 o'clock position, it would not necessarily have become hot enough to cause these burns. At the 12 o'clock position, it almost certainly was, or certainly it was capable of causing these burns.
Counsel, to what extent are you relying on the consequences of the injuries to the child as compared to the underlying actions of the appellant?
Your Honor, they're both factors that have to be considered by the jury.
So if it was a scalding injury rather than a burn injury, how would we as an appellate court factor that in?
Your Honor, so the catastrophic nature of the injuries, not so much as the manner in which they were caused, it would be the fact that would be determined for this court.
Counsel, can I move on to a different area? The staff sergeant testified that, in his opinion, this conduct was service discrediting, and the judge, I believe, allowed that, both as the staff sergeant, as his Marine experience, and as a civilian. And at court, at the trial, the government obviously thought that was appropriate evidence. At the CCA, it reversed itself and said that that was error to allow that, and now you reverse yourself again. Where are we today?
Yes, Your Honor. The concession made before the CCA was legally inappropriate. The United States has adjusted its position because legally that was acceptable evidence.
But we have earlier cases that have said that one of the things that we look at for lay opinion testimony is whether or not it's helpful to the members. And they have said that this type of testimony going to the terminal element isn't particularly helpful to the members. The members can figure this out. And really what they're doing is testifying as to, you know, essentially the result of the trial. But that an average member, given this evidence, can make up their own mind.
Your Honor, this was not necessarily terribly compelling testimony, but the United States agrees this type of testimony should be analyzed under Littlewood. We simply believe that the facts here are distinguishable from the facts.
Can I ask it a different way? Why is the testimony of an MP sergeant helpful on the subject of baby care?
Your Honor, he is a member of the public, and the members can consider his knowledge of the facts and...
Well, the testimony is supposed to be helpful, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be expert testimony. It has to be helpful if it's a lay testimony.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're saying it is helpful to hear from an MP sergeant if the matter involves baby care? Is that who you'd turn to? Sergeants are going to start publishing books on baby care?
No, Your Honor. Certainly there's no indication that he had any particular expertise or helpful information.
Is there any indication he would have been more helpful than any other random person selected?
No, Your Honor. He didn't possess any special qualifications to allow him to testify here.
Even if we were to assume that this testimony was appropriate, wouldn't it have been better to have a member of the public rather than a Marine testify as to what the public's opinion is? One of the problems there is that people in the military tend to view things from a military perspective. And our standard here is, what is the perspective of the public?
Certainly, the members could consider evidence from a member of the public, just as they could consider this staff sergeant's evidence. You're right, it's a good argument for the appellant to offer a trial that a member of the public's concerns might be more compelling than this particular staff sergeant, therefore his testimony doesn't.
Well, say we have, are we supposed to have dueling members? I mean, the government brings in John Doe, and John Doe says, oh, God, this is horrible. I think worse of the Marine Corps. And the defense brings in John Doe, too, and John Doe, too, says, well, it was just an accident. I wouldn't think any less of the Marine Corps. So is that what we're supposed to do?
No, Your Honor, that's not what's expected, which is why this question
Because you've got John Doe there, and that's what he's doing. Only John Doe's a Marine.
Yes, Your Honor. But that's why the resolution of this question is not terribly important to resolution of the granted issue, because as this Court stated in Phillips, the conduct simply has to be of a nature to discredit the armed forces.
Well, if it's not terribly important, why is the government going to the trouble of reversing itself twice?
Simply because that was a legally incorrect position, Your Honor.
Well, tell me why it's legally inappropriate, which is the term you used at the beginning.
Yeah, and perhaps that was an artful, Your Honor.
Legally inappropriate, legally whatever.
Yes, sir.
Why?
It's our position that under Littlewood, under 701, this is potentially helpful testimony to the members.
Counsel, can you just go back to the facts for a minute, please, and tell me what specifically here, in your view, endangered the child? Right, that's one of the elements that you have to, that's one of the things that the government has to prove. What specifically are you relying on? Is it that it was water? Was it hot? Was it hotter than he thought it would be? What specifically are you relying on?
Your Honor, the fact that he abandoned the baby in a bathtub.
Using the word abandoned, counsel, rather loosely, given that from all we understand today, he was in the same room.
He was in close physical proximity, Your Honor. That's his testimony. There's nothing to contradict that. However, he didn't entirely turn his attention away from the child. And certainly the significance of the injuries indicate the extent to which...
I'm not asking about the injuries. I'm asking what act did he take that endangered the child? Is it that he turned his attention away from him?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so it had nothing to do with the water, nothing to do with the bath?
Well, the fact that the bath was... He turned his attention away from the baby under those particular circumstances when the bath was filled with water. So this is...
And how was that culpably negligent?
It's foreseeable that under those circumstances, significant injury could come to the child. If this is a 10-month-old, they could be pulling up on things. The child could try to stand up on the side of the tub, slip in the water, and fall and crack its skull.
So if a parent bathes a child and turns its attention away to get a towel or get soap or something from the cabinet, and the child slips and breaks something, that's culpable negligence?
When it's done for this length of time.
For 45 seconds maximum.
Under those circumstances, the evidence is legally sufficient to support that charge. Now, certainly there are good arguments to be made.
Well, you have two things, though, right, counsel? Which is, one, you have to say that the facts that you've just done are enough to meet two prongs of the elements of this offense. And then you have to go further and say why, therefore, it's legally sufficient for us to conclude that it is legally sufficient find under those circumstances that a member of the public would think that this tended to bring the military into disrepute.
Yes, Your Honor. And the members can consider the facts supporting each of those elements. They can consider the same facts in order to support the two elements. So,
but you're relying very heavily, it seems to me, on the injuries that actually did occur.
Yes, Your Honor. For the service discretion element, not for the...
Why do you suppose, therefore, then, that the statute takes that into account only for purposes of the sentence that can be imposed?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
I mean, doesn't the statutory scheme rely on whether injury acts as injury is not required, but if it occurs, then they can be subjected to greater punishment?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what does that have to do with the establishing the element of service discredit?
The catastrophic results could cause the public to hold the armed forces in less esteem. This is shocking. These are shocking results of this misconduct, and that is one factor that the members could rely on to determine that the public would be upset by this and would hold the Marine Corps or the armed forces in general in lower esteem as a result.
Are you arguing that the results themselves reflect that, or that the results reflect the manner in which the child was injured in a particular way? Here's the difference, and I gather you're relying solely on the fact that the child was burned severely, but it would be different if the manner of the injuries, like with a spiral fracture, that indicates sometimes the manner in which the child was injured, not just the fact that they were injured. Is the government arguing that the medical evidence here reflects a particular manner in which the child was injured, or just the severity of the injuries that occurred? Do you understand the distinction?
Yes, Your Honor. The medical evidence certainly indicated that he was scalded by this bathwater, and the degree of the injuries supports the level of negligence that Sergeant Norman exercised, and also support the service discrediting nature of the conduct.
I get the service discrediting, but you're not arguing. Are you arguing that the nature of the injuries therefore indicates the child was left in the bath for 45 seconds of scalding water, or just that was the result however long he was left in the bath?
The evidence does not conclusively establish that the water was scalding for that entire 45 seconds.
And is there anything in the record that was presented to members that would indicate that this, while it was the first bath, it was not the first instance where the child was injured while in the care of the father? Is there anything that was presented to the members of an evidentiary nature in that regard?
Yes, Your Honor. Certainly the evidence introduced to support the other charges regarding
For example,
the TBN sustained in Beaufort.
Counsel, the proper standard is service discrediting conduct, not service discrediting consequences. What should we take from that?
Yes, Your Honor. It's certainly you have to look at the conduct, but it is appropriate to view all the circumstances surrounding that conduct and determining whether or not it would be service discrediting. So you can properly consider the injuries that TBN sustained and the fact that those injuries did become known to the public.
Counsel, in your opinion, and I recognize that is not this case, but in your opinion, if there had been no consequences to the child, right, because the offense does not require actual mental or physical injury, does it?
No, it does not, Your Honor.
So in this case, if there had been no actual physical consequence to the child from the actions taken by the appellant. Do you think that the case, the charge would still be legally sufficient?
Yes, Your Honor, given the circumstances in which he turned his attention away from the child. So, obviously, there are circumstances in which the child could be grievously injured under these circumstances. It's unlikely that it would have been charged under these circumstances, and certainly there's a much better argument for the appellant to make, and I see that my time is running short.
Please complete the answer, if you'd like.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. It could be legally sufficient, Your Honor. It's difficult to determine all the variables, but here, clearly, there was sufficient evidence for them to make that determination because of the catastrophic injuries that did result.
Any other questions up here? Okay. Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal opportunity for appellant.
Your Honor, the defense actually has no rebuttal unless there are further questions.
Counsel, I have one. Are you disputing the first three elements of the specification here today? I mean, obviously, we're talking about the terminal element, and that's where most of it goes. And I know there was some give and take in the briefs as to whether these were still going, but when I look at the granted issue, it doesn't seem to include those.
Yes, sir. The granted issue, like you said, does not address those, but the defense would dispute whether or not this is culpably negligent. United States v. Johnson is an Army case cited in the rebuttal brief that says that placing a child in water when you don't know the water is hot is not culpably negligent.
But the issue you presented to us for review does not include that.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
What is your answer to the question I asked the government? Was there or was there not evidence presented to the members indicating that the child was or was not injured while in the care of the father on other occasions?
Your Honor, he was acquitted of all other charges in this case, save this one. So the evidence presented was not proven beyond a reasonable doubt, so it's legally insufficient to support.
If he was acquitted of those charges, could members have relied on that evidence for other charges?
No, Your Honor.
The evidence was solely presented with respect to those charges.
Yes, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel. The case is now submitted, and we'll stand in recess until some further time, 10 minutes from now. I can't see that. What time is that?
10-2.
Okay, 5 of 10. Thank you. Sorry about that. 9:55. 9:55.